Welcome to Light Your Leadership Talks, or LIL Talks. Every week, we bring you informal chats with leaders and leadership experts from around the globe. Your host is Lisa Anna Palmer, author of the international best-selling book, Light a Fire in Their Hearts, The Truth About Leadership. Listen in so that you too can stay informed about the latest wise practices that set great leaders apart.
I'm Lisa Anna Palmer, the author of the international bestseller, Light a Fire in Their Hearts, The Truth About Leadership, and the creator of the Light Your Leadership Talks, or LIL Talks for short. I help high performers turned aspiring leaders, managers, and executives to shift their mindset so that they can be great people leaders. So Gina Gardner, our guest today, is coming to us straight from the UK. Welcome, Gina.
Thank you very much for inviting me. I'm really thrilled to be here.
Oh, it's an honor to have you. So I'm just going to read your bio here. It's amazing. So Gina is a number one international best-selling author, a motivational speaker, empowerment and relationship coach, and a transformational leadership coach and trainer with well over 30 years of experience helping people experience happiness, success, and fulfillment. She's the founder of the Thrive Together Tribe. Love that name. And personal and spiritual development program, as well as the Enlightened Leadership Program. So the awesome and inspiring Gina has had to relearn to walk not only once, but twice as an adult. And for over 20 years, she ran her award-winning school for the most part from a wheelchair. So that's major accomplishment to do on its own, and to have to do it, you know, after having lived through serious challenges is amazing. It's inspiring for all of us. For over 20 years, she ran her award-winning school. And the gift of this experience was that she developed a unique approach to life and development of transformational leadership. If I understand correctly, Gina, you also did a lot of work with organizations, correct? With other schools as well?
I left school in 2004. And since then, I've been working initially with corporates. And since 2009, I've been working with SMEs for the most part.
Wow. Wow. Right. Because you are principal at the school.
Yes.
And you led to become recognized as one of the top schools, right?
In the UK, we are inspected by Her Majesty's Inspectorate. And every year they nominate the 100 top schools. And we were on that list twice during my tenure, which I'm very proud.
Fantastic. That's a big, that's a really, really big accomplishment. So Gina is passionate about supporting people to live a truly happy, successful, and fulfilling life, and supporting leaders to lead with integrity, which is important, compassion, and the courage to do what is right rather than what is expedient. Thank you so much for joining us.
I'm really pleased to be here. I'm very excited.
Wonderful. Yes, we're excited too, because it's so important, right, to be genuine leaders. So many people show up at work, you know, pretending to be someone else. And then when the leader takes and models the example of being authentic, you know, that's so powerful and encourages others to do the same. Before we begin with some questions, in the spirit of giving back, if you feel called to make a charitable donation today, please consider Doctors Without Borders. So Gina, let's begin. What does it mean to be genuine? What does it mean to be genuine?
I think each of us, that when we step into being genuinely who we are, of course there are parts of us that we would want to be better, but it's about owning who we are. It's about recognizing that we don't have to be frightened to be vulnerable, and being vulnerable is very different to being a victim, that we don't have to know all the answers, that when we go into a situation, if we leave our ego at home in bed under the pillow with our nighty or our pajamas, and we turn up being us, it is enough. And I think one of the issues, particularly for women in business, is there's this view that you have to almost be less hairy men, that you've got to present yourself as somebody who's going to be assertive to the point of being bullish, rather than using our feminine energy. And there's nothing weak about feminine energy. It is about, you know, recognizing that we are nurturers. We are creative. We can deal with things in a way that allows us to be truly ours. We don't have to pretend to be like somebody else. Being ours is absolutely enough. And many women suffer from imposter syndrome. You know, if I don't behave like Superwoman, you know, the only thing that's missing is the red sparkly knickers. If I don't behave like Superwoman, and I've got everything perfect and I look as if I'm in control the whole time, when actually we're perhaps feeling vulnerable or struggling or it's something that we don't know, then I think what we then try to do is to be something to please other people. And in the end, we lose sight of who we are. And that puts us in a place of having no power. So by being truly you and owning yourself, taking radical responsibility for who you are, how you think, what you say, what you do, and what you don't, by doing that, that means that you're going to be the leader of your own life. You're the common denominator. You take yourself into every moment of every day, from the moment you conceived until you die. We don't know, maybe beyond. But ultimately, it makes the sense to own who you are and to make the best of who you are. And everybody is a unique, amazing human being with huge talents and experiences and potential, unlimited potential, when they stop trying to be something they're not.
I love so much of what you said, Gina, you know, talking about radical responsibility, about us celebrating and stepping into our woman leadership, and that we do lead different. And that's a good thing, you know, and how do we show up in that space? It's so important.
Yeah.
It actually takes a lot of courage to be yourself, you know, and I think you are living proof of the depth of courage that we have within us. That we can bring out by being ourselves and stepping into ourselves. So thank you for sharing that. Now, you know, the next question is, how does being more genuine help one to step up and be a better leader? So you kind of touched on it, but if you could just maybe go a little bit deeper into that, please.
I reckon everybody that's listening to this has worked with someone who they have felt has been a poor leader. I think everybody, if you said to, if I said to you, can you list the characteristics of poor leadership? None of you would have a problem in giving me a whole list of stuff. And certainly I learned how to be a good leader from working for two dire leaders and was determined that whatever else happened, I wouldn't behave like them. And so the things that I think that make the difference is if you're not truly owning who you are, and you're trying to be all things to all men and women, then there's no integrity. It's you've got to model the very behaviours, the very approaches that you want from other people. And you can't model those, I don't think, effectively if you're trying to play a part. Different if you're in a film or a play, but in real life, the cracks will show. And people have that, they read that energy, they very quickly recognize when you are saying what they think you are saying, what you think they want to hear. Mm-hmm. Because it's very difficult to keep that up because you can't remember what you've said to other people.
Mm-hmm.
If you have no integrity and no authenticity, then that begins to show as something very shallow and something where people will initially maybe be taken in, but ultimately we'll start to distrust. And to be a great leader, in my opinion, it has to be built on mutual respect and it has to be built on trust both ways.
Mm-hmm.
How can people trust a leader who will say one thing in one context and another in another simply to be popular?
Mm-hmm.
How can people trust that that person's got their best interests at heart if what you see is them playing the game and not being true to who they are, even sometimes when that's unpopular? So long as people trust and respect you, even when you have to take unpopular decisions, they will trust the fact that you're doing it for the right reasons. But if you're not authentic, if you're not genuine, and that trust isn't there, then they will be trying to second guess what's going on here. What's the real agenda? Who, you know, who's he being or she being talking to? And the other thing for me is the minute you stop being genuine, authentically who you are, you're not only trying to manage the leading of other people outside you, but I think that when we are not truly being who we are, we're not being genuine, that starts to have an impact on our physical and our mental health, our emotional health. And I suspect that many people who are currently anxious and depressed, that one of the significant contributory factors is that they've lost who they are. And that they are living a life where they are not in line with their values because they're trying to please somebody else or trying to maintain a role in an organization where the values of the organization are, it's not just about making a compromise, it is about you are being compromised. And I think there's a qualitative difference.
And, you know, I really, I'm really glad you touched on the word, you know, playing the game, or the expression playing the game, you know, because certainly I and I'm sure you have too in your coaching, have run into, you know, people who want to be themselves and are themselves and are aspiring leaders and are moving up the ranks, and maybe they'll go get advice on how to get ahead. And the response they'll get is you need to play the game or you need to be mean to get ahead, things like that. Like what, you know, what advice do you have in those instances when people get that type of, you know, nefarious advice?
For me, I think we can look at leadership, which has gone on before, and we can look at the sort of leaders that we're going to need moving forward. And I think they're going to be very different. I think we're moving into a new era of consciousness. I think that the it was the Dalai Lama, I think, who said that it's going to be the Western woman who saves the world. And I think we are moving into a time when the old paradigm of leadership, where it was very male energy, and I think both men and women have male and female energy. It's not that I'm anti-men. Please don't think that, because I'm not. But an energy which is winning is the only thing at any cost. I believe that moving forward, what's going to make the difference is having leaders who are truly enlightened, in the sense that they recognize that in order to move forward, it's not about playing a game. It's not about playing a part and doing whatever seems expedient to get to where you want to. And if that means climbing over other people or exploiting other people, well, that's fair game. And we can see examples of that throughout the globe. For me, I'm not interested in that. For me, it's how are there people who have got a growing sense of awareness, who want to be involved in leadership at a very different level, who see themselves as not only being able to help within their organization, their family, but want to actually be part of making a qualitative difference to the lives of people, to the environment, to whatever. And recognizing that, you know, you can't, you know, people say, well, what can I do? There's only me. But ultimately, I mean, if you ladies have ever spent time in a room at night with a mosquito, you will know that small things can be incredibly powerful and have a profound effect. So in every decision we make, everything we do is a choice. Every word we utter or not, when and how. Every action we take, when and how, or not at all. And every choice that we make has consequences. And what I find most interesting is that it's often when we don't make an active choice that the consequences are most far-reaching. So for me, this is about a new era of leaders. It's about people who see their role within the context of whether it's their family, whether it's with the organization that they work with, social or business, that actually this is about making a positive difference. And of course, you can be profitable as well. It's not about wearing a hair shirt and sitting on the top of a mountain, you know, just eating air. The interesting thing, and I've proved this now time and time with the organizations that I've worked with, is that when you lead in this way, when you stand in your power, then you see the potential in others and you grow those others and you start to work collaboratively, then you become more productive, more profitable, better well-being, better work-life balance. So at a business sense, it makes sense. At a personal sense, it makes sense. And what's interesting is I'm interested to see who's going to rise above all of the white noise and the challenge that there is, and I don't underestimate that, and who's going to step forward and say, I want to be an enlightened leader, I want to make a positive difference in the world, and I'm prepared to do the deep dive inner work to do that.
Really, we are seeing, because of what's happened with COVID in particular, it's been like a catalyst, right? And and the people-centered leaders are the ones who are coming out on top, who have more credibility than the ones who, you know, first day after, you know, places shut down, people are working from home. They're like, okay, we still have to get results. We need to move on. Those kinds of leaders have lost credibility quite quickly. And people are now looking to those who try to make them feel safe, who help, you know, are authentically there saying, you know, this is a hard time for everyone. And those are the kinds of leaders who are really rising to the top. So I love that you're seeing that in your part of the world as well. I believe that that's going to lead to a world that is more authentic and genuine, less about playing games. And one of the things that you mentioned earlier too was about, you know, what causes people to feel like they're more stressed at work, where they feel disengaged and might lead to sick leave, et cetera, is the fact that they're not in alignment with their truth, right? They're not being genuine and they're trying to be someone else. So if you can maybe talk a little bit more about that, you know, if you've seen examples where maybe someone was feeling that way and then all of a sudden they went through a process where they became more genuine, more in touch with their truth, and then their life changed for the better.
I think actually pretty well every client, whether they come for personal coaching or relationship coaching or business coaching, but interestingly for me, it doesn't matter which route people come through, there are common things that get looked at and, you know, paradigm shifts that happen along the way. And that's another reason why I talk about leadership for life, because whilst these things often are exposed in the business context, they are also mirrored in other parts of people's lives. And I think, you know, if you are in an organization or a family for that matter, where the values are a huge variance with who you are and what you stand for, and I think many people have got caught in the trap of, I need to bring home a salary of this much in order to sustain my lifestyle, so I've got to put up with it, and I've got to do what they want in order to make sure that I keep my family safe. But the cost of that in terms of anxiety, stress, depression is huge. Do you know, in the UK, over half the prescriptions are for antidepressants.
Wow.
The biggest killer of men under 42 is suicide.
Wow.
£70 billion a year lost in days because of stress to the economy. £140 plus billion a year because of presenteeism, where people are going to work but aren't firing on all cylinders because they are stressed, anxious, depressed. And in my experience, depression, one of the major causes of depression is if you are in a job where you do not believe in what you're doing, where you are not in line with those principles, where you are being forced to, or feel you're being forced to, behave in a way that actually is at variance with who you are. And the results are catastrophic in terms of people's well-being. Mm. What's interesting is when I work with those people, when I've worked with them, it sort of goes down two avenues, really. There are things in your life you can't change, okay? Or at least there are things in your life that I couldn't change being in a wheelchair, for example. Mm. But there are things in your life that you feel you can't change. The only thing you can do is change your attitude to it, change the way you react to it. And for some people, what they, having worked with them, is that they have made the decision that they will stay where they are at least for the moment, but that they will operate differently. And that despite the what's going on at an institutional level, that they'll be true to themselves. And that's taken a lot of courage. And for me, that's one of the reasons why I think leadership needs such a lot of courage. Interestingly, almost without exception, when they've started to behave differently, it's acted as the catalyst for other people to do the same. Because other people were feeling they couldn't speak up. They couldn't say, actually, do you know what? That's not right. But once somebody was brave enough to do it in a very professional way, other people said, no, that's not right. And things began to change. The other group of people made the decision, and it has to be an individual one, what's right for them, that they would start preparation to leave that organization, to leave that role, that job. And sometimes that's been to look for another job with an organization that has values much more in line with them. And sometimes it's been, well, actually, I'm going to work for myself, and then it's down to me. But I can say pretty well, hand on heart, that whichever route they've taken, as soon as they have started to own who they are, things have shifted and got so much better. And, you know, the depression and the anxiety that they came from has gone because the cause of that has been dealt with. It's pretty powerful stuff. But often people need some help around having permission to be themselves. You know, they can hear their mother or their father or a teacher or somebody who said something when they went, can't do that, or you'll never make anything, or you're not clever enough, or you're not something enough. And sometimes you have to recognize who's that voice. And if that voice is not your own, then you have to ask yourself the question, is that still true? Is that relevant for me? And if it's your own voice saying you can't do that because, then I think you have to do the inner work in terms of, let's do an audit of your beliefs. Which are the ones that limit you? Because most of our beliefs are based on something that's said or done when we're tiny, and we carry that belief and we don't question it. And so it gets perpetuated, and then you look for evidence to make it true. And of course, if you look for evidence, you'll always find it. And so, yeah, I had a really, really powerful lesson. I'd not long left being a principal, okay? And whilst I was a principal, I worked for the National College, I worked for the London Institute, for the government as an advisor, to bring a budget into school, not all at the same time. Remember, I was a principal for 20 years, so yes. I did these roles over time. And, you know, people would say to me, aren't you brave to go up to Sheffield or to go, you know, wherever to do this work? And at one level, one could argue that I was in a wheelchair, but I always had a taxi driver pick me up, same taxi driver, take me to where I was going, wait for me and bring me back. In 2006, I went on a course run by Tony Robbins, who I'm sure you're familiar with. And I'd completed my neuro-linguistic programming training, and I wanted to see as many people using NLP as possible. And I went, and I was pretty cynical, let me tell you, thinking, huge guy, huge energy. It'll all be razzmatazz, and 10 days later, it'll all be dissipated and gone. How wrong can you be? So in the first morning, he was talking about a program that he was running in California, and I just dismissed it. At that time, I didn't have a travel wheelchair, and I just said, no, I can't do that. I wouldn't be able to manage on my own, and I just let it go. That evening, we did the firewalk, and for those of you that are not aware of a firewalk, you walk across hot coals in bare feet, about, I suppose, 20, 30 feet, and if you're in the right mindset, you can walk on hot coals, red hot coals, and not get burned. Now, at that time, I just had an internal spinal stimulator fitted. I could walk probably 4 or 5 steps unaided. So I was absolutely chuffed to little mint balls with somebody holding my arm each side that I did the firewalk, and I was just ecstatic. And I turned around and I sat in my wheelchair, and the guy behind me was a double amputee, no legs below the knee. He tipped himself up onto his hands, and he walked across hot coals in his hands.
Wow.
And to use the language of the pupils of my school, I was gobsmacked. I thought, if he can do that, how am I self-limiting? So that night I went and bought my flight, and I booked my ticket. I went and did the program, loved it, did all of his programs, became a senior leader for him. Since then, I've traveled the world, and I am grateful to that guy. I have no idea who he is. But I share this story because every one of us, don't care who you are, every one of us will at some point self-limit. And I'm urging you to look for what's possible rather than all of the reasons why you can't. Now, it took a bit of problem solving, but I had a fabulous time. And I would say to all of you, you're all far more capable than you actually think you are.
That is really an invitation to have some deep reflection, because you're absolutely right. We do limit ourselves. And, you know, it's by hearing inspiring stories, you know, like the one you're sharing about yourself doing this fire walk, you know, at a time in your life that was very difficult for you to do. And then seeing someone else do that has inspired you. So it's like a circle, right? And then sharing our stories. I think that's part of being our authentic selves too, is having the courage to share our stories. Which a lot of us hold back sometimes.
Many people are fearful that they're going to be judged.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing, and I've worked now with so many people, and our biggest critic is not the people outside. Our biggest critic is us. And we say things to ourselves that we would never say to anybody else. So my advice is treat yourself as you would a good friend.
You know, I like what you said about, because this internal critic is composed of the very many voices we heard of people growing up telling us we can't do stuff, and then we've internalized it. So then it sounds like our voice, right?
It does, yeah.
and that cognitive dissonance about, you know, how, what I feel like I want to do and what I actually do, and that internal struggle and internal conflict, fighting against ourselves all the time, wanting to do that thing, but then holding back because we're afraid. I absolutely believe, you know, what you said is right on, that a lot of people feel depressed or anxious or whatnot because they're not living their truth and they're fighting against themselves every single day, you know?
It is just so tiring to be fighting against your true self. Yeah. And that's, for me, one of the reasons why, you know, to be a great leader, you have to do the inner work on yourself.
Mm.
And that's about developing the confidence that you're not going to get it right all the time. And you're not going to know all the answers.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, if you grow your team around you, then you've got the best of their skills, expertise, and experience and enthusiasms. You don't have to do it all alone. But it's a brave person that turned around and said, well, you know more than me. Let's hear what you've got to say. And, you know, I think back to when I ran my school. I wanted the very best of people. But I was much more about the person than the qualification. They had to be a good team member. They had to be generous in terms of their giving opportunities for people to learn. They had to be thirsty for learning themselves and ready to work hard. But I wanted the very best. You know, that could be threatening. And many people appoint those who are not quite as good as them because they're worried that that will show them up. But from my point of view, it's my job to bring the best out in other people, not be the best at everything.
Mm-hmm.
It's to encourage and to support and to hold people to account in a developmental way so that we get the very best for them and from them.
Mm-hmm. And that's true leadership, you know, the ability to shift. And when I talk about shifting from individual contributor, high performer, to great people leader, it's letting go of the need to shine, letting go of the need for recognition directly to ourselves, but to be able to celebrate others and watch them shine and help them grow as well. So you mentioned a few challenges along the way, but if you could just maybe go a little bit deeper, you know, what are some of the challenges that leaders may encounter on the road to becoming more genuine? You know, we talked about courage. What are some of the other challenges?
People have got to be prepared to do the introspection, and often they're fearful of that. And, you know, it's in the quiet, it's in that inner work very often that we see truths about ourselves that perhaps not comfortable. And that's one of the reasons why it's so helpful, I think, to work with someone else who can actually hold the space and hold your hand if needs be. I think sometimes it can feel overwhelming. Maybe not know quite where to start. And particularly if people have got poor self-worth and poor confidence, then, you know, they don't necessarily have that confidence to actually look in the mirror and say, you know, that bit's good. Interestingly, if you ask most people, and again, I'm going to focus on women because I think women, this is particularly true for. If you say to them, write a list of all the things that you can't do well, that you don't like about yourself, you have to stop them writing because they'll go on for pages. Ask them to choose five things that they're really proud of about themselves, that they love about themselves, and many women will struggle big time. And I think that, and when this may be more so in the UK, because I think we're brought up to be self-deprecating. You know, if you tell people what you've achieved, then it's boastful. And I think there is a difference between owning your achievements and boasting about them. So I think that that self-confidence to be able to look at yourself and recognize that yep, there are, all for all of us, there are going to be things that we need to develop and grow. I think one of the biggest problems is fear. Fear of looking silly, fear of not being enough, fear of being seen as an imposter, fear of, I don't know how to do it. Fear keeps you stuck. You know, if you think about your comfort zone, it's like wearing a great big double thickness duvet. And in the winter, when it's Arctic, that feels quite comfortable. But the trouble is, it's still the same level of tog in the summer, and it can become stultifying. But once you step out of your comfort zone and get over that business, instead of it being frightening, it's just unfamiliar. And if you can step over that being unfamiliar and you do it a few times, and then it becomes familiar, so your comfort zone expands. And every one of us is capable of so much more than we are able to be and do. I find it very interesting that we're called human beings when I think, for the most part, and I absolutely hold myself in this, we're human doings. And it's the being bit that many of us shy away from because it feels uncomfortable. And I know it's been a journey for me to be able to look at myself and to recognize that, you know, I didn't have a great relationship with myself. I was very successful professionally and I hid behind that. And it wasn't until I gave up being a principal, and I was 50, how old was I? 51 at the time. I was back to being 14 and full of eczema and overweight and shy. And who was I when I wasn't being that professional role? And I think that resonates for many women, that they are incredibly successful professionally, but they still haven't got a great relationship with themselves. They don't know who they are when they're not being that doing job.
Yeah, and that's so fascinating, you know, because tying back to what you were mentioning, we have to do that self-reflection, introspection, because leadership is really from the inside out.
It is.
Right? Yeah. So that's why that work is fundamentally important. And many times we see people who take on leadership roles without ever having even asked themselves if they wanted to have a formal leadership role with all the responsibilities that come along with it. So that introspection piece is extremely crucially important. And what's interesting too is sometimes how we see some of the outwardly toughest leaders. So the ones who become, you know, bullies and mistreat others, etc., might be the ones actually who are the most fearful about confronting themselves.
I think that. And I've noticed a sea change since the last recession, 2008-09. And I think the quality of leadership, and I'm talking about across the board now, I think that there's been a huge deterioration in the quality of leadership. And I think that there was an enormous surge of fear that people were not going to be successful, that they couldn't meet their targets, that profits became the be-all and end-all, and they started looking at profits rather than from the other end, which is to say, what do we want to achieve And how do we achieve it? How do we make the most of our people? And so they put huge pressure on themselves and then on other people that if they weren't meeting the targets, they didn't want to know why. That wasn't important. It was, if you don't meet your targets, you're out. And I think it's very short-sighted. You may get a spurt in profits in the very short term, but then the cost in terms of absenteeism, of lack of performance and so on, starts to kick in. And I think it's when leaders recognise that actually, if you've got staff not achieving what you want to, don't start with them, start with you. And it's so often I hear from leaders, but people don't do what I want them, or they're always coming to me and interrupting me to ask me questions. I think they're rubbish staff, or they're all so inexperienced, or they're all this, that, or the other. But interestingly, when you start to work with that leader and say, okay, so now how are you going to train and develop your people to become thinkers? That means you've got to let go. That means you've got to be very clear about what your why is and your vision to achieve your why. You've got to be clear about your expectations. And language is so important. How many times do you hear people say, that's excellent, or you need to do better? But it's meaningless unless you're able to clothe that with excellence in this context looks like these behaviours and you're getting these results. And doing better means I need you to focus on this and do it in this way, or to think about how you can approach this differently. So that you have within any organisation or family a shared language, so that when you're using words like excellence and could do better or well done, that people understand that language. And that, I think, is so important in relationships. We have a blueprint for leadership, for excellence. But unless we unpick it with other people, we all assume that everybody has got the same blueprint. And it's not true. And I think one of the reasons why my organisation and the organisations I've worked with have become so successful is because we create a language which is specific to that organisation. So working in a hotel, for example, one of my clients, in the housekeeping department, they had real problems because the housekeepers wouldn't all keep to the same standard. So they then ran some sessions saying, okay, what does good look like in the context of a bathroom or a bedroom? How does excellent differ from good? So instead of the manager just telling them what to do, all of the nuances and the language came from them. And at a stroke, the quality of work improved because everybody had a shared understanding of what was expected. But when we fail to do that, there is so much room for misunderstanding and for people to have a different set of values that I think a lot of problems come because there's not that shared language.
It's important if you have competencies, value statements, any kind of feedback we're giving to employees, and also to do the exercise for ourselves, is what do some of these things mean? What does excellence mean? What does valuing, respecting others mean? And it could be about, being a great people leader. It doesn't always have to be about the bottom line, because that comes later, right?
I agree. And for me, so many organizations do this and they tick the box. Yeah. Got values, we've got competencies, but they're dead. They might just as well be in a dead language. And for me, it's got to be that is part of your day-to-day language, that it becomes the manager's role to incorporate that language as they go through, and to revisit. It's not done once. It is revisited, and it will evolve over time to be something which really becomes, if you like, the foundation, the fabric of that organisation. And people coming in can then very quickly learn the culture, because part of their induction is to engage them in that conversation, mm-hmm. so that they understand where and it can work at a team level, obviously better at an organisational level, but there are many organisations where you know, things aren't going great in the organization, but you'll have a team that is working incredibly well. And that will be, I believe, because the leader of that team is using some of these fundamental ways of working.
Absolutely. And bringing it back to being genuine, having those conversations will help people become more genuine, and having those authentic conversations about what is the meaning behind this? What is the meaning behind what we're doing and how we're expected to behave and what we're supposed to achieve, you know? And so it doesn't just become an exercise, like you said, and ticking off, you know, the checklist.
I think it's really important too, that if you've set this as the expectation, being authentic is actually going to somebody and saying, actually, do you know what? That's not good enough. Mm-hmm. I expect more from you. Mm-hmm. So go back to my school situation. When I appointed people, I would always have this conversation before the formal interview started. And I'd say, we really want to make sure this is a good fit both ways. So if you want to work here, you've got to be a hard worker. You've got to be a good team member. You've got to want to learn, and you've got to want to share learning. We don't do moody, and this is an aggression tolerance of aggression free zone. If that works for you, then we'll do the interview. But if it doesn't, we won't think anything worse of you. We'll just wish you well. I mean, everybody stayed, I have to say. Mm-hmm. And people rose to that. And one of the things that gave me the greatest pleasure was when young staff would say in one form or another, you know, you could tell us that it wasn't good enough in a way that made us feel that we wanted to be better. Mm. And for me, that's so important. It's not about putting people down and making them feel small. It's about making them want to be the better version of them. And that, for me, is so important as a leader, that you nurture and you grow potential. Doesn't mean that you're a soft touch. Doesn't mean that you don't have high standards. Quite the opposite.
And that's being genuine, a genuine leader, right? Having those clear expectations and then helping people and supporting them to achieve those by giving them feedback, honest feedback, even if it's difficult sometimes. Oh, so much wisdom. Thank you so much, Gina. I just wanted to thank you from the bottom of my heart, because, you know, what you shared today and just, you know, in less than an hour is so meaningful, so valuable, and so insightful for all of us. And I really want to thank you and relay my deep gratitude for being with
us
here today.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you very much for giving me the opportunity. I'm passionate about what I do, and I love to share it with people.
A big thank you to our Lil Talk listeners for tuning into today's show. Please share with friends and colleagues who care about leadership and what is happening in our workplaces. If you'd like to keep this conversation going, please go to lightyourleadership.com to book a discovery call. While you're there, be sure to grab your copy of Light a Fire in Their Hearts, The Truth About Leadership. We wish you an excellent rest of the week. And until next time, remember to light your leadership, because building authentic business relationships will help you to love your life as a leader.